Transformation is inevitable, but it doesn't have to take forever. What if you could see the obstacles before they happen, sidestep the common mistakes, and drive change faster than ever? That's exactly what we're here to do. Welcome to Transformation Unfiltered, the podcast where HR professionals share their stories about how they've hit fast forward on their transformation efforts and built legacies as world-class people leaders and change makers. And now, here's the show.
I do feel like I got very clear with myself. And what was so interesting was when I was very clear and aligned to it, it did feel easier. And it did feel so easy to be clear. So it wasn't, I wasn't like worried about how do I say this? What do I say? I just said to myself, like, that's never going to happen again. What do I need to start doing to make sure that doesn't happen? And there are going to be things that I make decisions about that are going to make other people not happy and make other people say, but this is more important. And my answer is going to be, no, my family is more important. And that's why I'm making this decision. I had a good example of that in that same role. It was probably a couple months later, whatever, the following year. But I had a meeting that I had been invited to in Germany. And it was a meeting that went through a Friday. And I had a guitar recital that I was going to attend the next day with my little one, the four-year-old. And she had worked really hard to be ready for this guitar recital. And I was going to be there, like, period. It wasn't a question. And when I got invited to this meeting that I needed to be at, which was fine, but the meeting was in Germany till 5 o'clock Friday. And when I looked at the flights, I realized I couldn't stay till 5 o'clock Friday because I wouldn't have made it home for the meeting on Saturday because we were off far away. It wasn't like a direct flight, I think. And it was a meeting with a board member that was invited. It was a big meeting. And I said to my boss, I can't stay till 5 o'clock on Friday. I need to leave by noon on Friday for me to be able to get out in time. And he was very concerned about that decision and was very worried that it was going to look really poorly on me. He understood, but he was worried for me that it was going to look poorly on me to this board member that was coming, and you're going to leave early and the board member's there and et cetera, et cetera. And it was not even a question for me. I was like, yep, I appreciate that your support. I appreciate your support. I appreciate your concern for me. And I'm leaving at noon on Friday. And whatever that means, I'm okay. If that means that board member is going to say, this is such a horrible decision on her part, we don't trust her judgment anymore, and she doesn't have this job anymore. I didn't care. I just said, I'm not doing this. I'm not missing that recital. Like, I committed I was going to be there, and A, I want to be, and B, I said I was going to be there, so I'm going to be there. And I left, and I'm sure that they were a little annoyed, and that was that. Like, I still had my job the next day, and those were the kinds of things that I feel like every time I did that, it made it easier and stronger for me to do.
We don't talk enough about the cost of being the reliable one. Today's episode is for anyone who's ever told you, you are so good at holding it together. And of course you feel a little good in that moment, but all the while, those people are really wondering, how long can that keep going on? Our guest today had what many would consider a dream job. In fact, she considered it a dream job. She just loved it. She was passionate about it. She was leading people strategy at the highest levels, working on global boards, flying across continents, and she was the go-to person everyone relied on, filled her bucket. She was also the breadwinner, a mom, and someone who prided herself on showing up strong. But when a long-awaited vacation with her family arrived, she didn't feel relieved. She felt pissed. She was angry. That moment, what happened next, that became the wake-up call that she just couldn't ignore. In this episode, Kim shares how she went from burnout to breakdown to boundaries and healing, and how choosing herself didn't make her less successful. It made her better at work, better at home, and better for herself. In fact, today, she shines. Let's hear it from her. Let's get into this episode of Transformation Unfiltered. Today, I get to welcome Kim Gaiso to the show. Kim has over 25 years of human resources experience as a generalist, as a leader in organizational development, learning and leadership development, and talent management. She's been in big roles in big companies like General Electric, Raytheon, Barrier Ingelheim Pharmaceuticals, Medidata Solutions, and even Lyra Health. Throughout these different industries, she's led all kinds of strategies, from global leadership and learning strategies to diversity and belonging strategies, corporate social responsibility, talent management, and employee relations, just to name a few. These strategies that she's built have resulted in these companies placing in the top 100 great places to work and great places to work in technology. She's also led them to win ATD Best, the Stevie Gold and Bronze Awards for most innovative learning and corporate social responsibility programs. I mean, she's done so much. Throughout her career, Kim has always been known to create environments that allow for authenticity, empathy, well-being, and alignment to purpose. And I think that's what's really her special sauce. Yes, those awards are incredible, but the ability to get to those awards is because she practices all of those things. Kim is certified with the College of Executive Coaching in Positive Psychology and Well-Being Coaching and the National Board of Medical Examiners and Wellness Certification. She's certified in Psychological Safety, EQI 2.0, Korn Ferry Learning Agility, and Kaplan DeVries LVI 360. Kim holds an MS in Human Performance from Southern Connecticut State University and a BA in Politics from Fairfield University. She lives in Bethlehem, Connecticut, and stays busy with playing lots of tennis, having fun with her two adult daughters, Emma and Zuzo, and helping to bring good things into the world by leading with authenticity, empathy, and well-being. Kim, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Shall we just dive right into it and talk a little bit about one of those messy moments that you had along the way in your career? Are you feeling brave today?
I am. Yes, I can do it. This was a significant moment for me and continues to be a really good reminder for me every day because it's something I struggle with every day. So this was probably 17 years ago. I was in a global role at a pharmaceutical company and was doing a lot of travel globally. I had two young girls at the time, and I think they were around like 4 and 7 would probably be the right ages, my two daughters. And we were on a vacation, and it was the first day of vacation. I was, of course, very excited about going on vacation. The girls were all excited, and it was a long day. We probably went to Mexico or somewhere like that. Obviously, it was a long day of travel, and we got there, and the kids were tired, but normal kids, and we got to the hotel room, and I don't remember what even started it, but my older daughter, who was, again, probably 7 at the time, started doing something that I was saying, like, that's enough, knock it off. And she was tired and just kept doing it. And of course, thought it was funnier to do. And yeah, was laughing and spinning around in circles. And I was getting more and more agitated and annoyed, obviously tired from the week before, whatever it was that led me to that vacation day. And I got more and more agitated and started getting more emphasized about, I may knock it off, stop it. And she finally just started laughing, spun around and winged her arm across and knocked the lamp off. We were in the hotel room. We'd just gotten there. Knocked the light off the nightstand and the light crashed down on the floor. And I think there's probably a half a second pause from her of, oh God, did I just go to her? And I just like completely lost it. I completely lost it on her. And I remember the reason it was just so significant to me was because I remember yelling and like screaming at her, like in her face, getting like really close up to her face and yelling. And I remember it wasn't like I was going to physically do anything. I didn't feel that at all, but I was screaming at her. And I remember literally feeling like this out-of-body moment, and I don't think that's ever happened to me before. I remember feeling this out-of-body moment where I could, like, was above myself, and I was watching myself do this, and I was continuing to yell, and I remember thinking, like, how are you doing this? And then it made it a million times worse because then my little one started to cry because I scared her. From yelling like that, which was probably horrible. And she started to cry, which then made it, of course, even worse. I felt horrible and even guiltier. And I continued to scream. And I remember thinking this out-of-body moment, what are you doing? Like this, these are the two most important things in your entire life. Like you would obviously run in front of a train for these two creatures. Stop. Like, why can't you stop yelling at her?
This is a very tender moment that you're sharing with us. I'm going to recap what I'm picking up. So you were a global pharmaceutical executive going across the Atlantic. And finally, it's time for vacation with Correct. Your family, right? Who you love. And you have two little girls. Would you mind telling us how old they were at the time again?
So I think they're about 4 and 7.
Oh, okay. So yes. I'm picturing a little girl who has just knocked something off and you're just sitting there
freaking out,
watching yourself freak out on her. Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
When you are sitting there telling me a little bit about that, I kept noticing your hand coming to your mouth and I'm like, oh, this isn't the Kim that I'm used to seeing, the confident Kim. What's running through your mind as you retell this moment?
That is so interesting, Alexa. I think guilt and shame. That's funny that you say my hand going to my mouth. And isn't that interesting? I wonder if it's stop yelling. I wonder if that's a subconscious. That's interesting. Body gestures, Lynn. But yeah, just horrible guilt about it and shame. I feel like shame is a really strong word, but yes, that's what it was and what it probably is for me. Yeah. I also think the moment was so momentous or monumental, whatever, for me, because it was so ironic, right? That it wasn't like after a work day necessarily. Not that would be right either, but it's just, oh, we're on vacation. Like it's the classic, like, I'm looking forward to it. We're so excited. You work so hard. You're ready to be there. And then all of a sudden, I've blown vacation in the first hour. I think that's also why it was shocking. It was shocking to me. Not that I have not yelled and screamed before. I totally have and had and continued to. But it was not aligned at all with how I want to be raising my kids. And I think I shocked myself from it. Yeah.
It sounds like you were saying you almost were watching yourself from the
totally
outside looking
was.
In and thinking, what the heck is happening?
Who is this? Yes. Yeah. That is what I was thinking. Who is this?
What did that person watching see? If you were going to, so I appreciate where you're coming from as a mom of 3 kids who has been there.
Yeah.
In those moments, what were you watching yourself do? What did that look like?
It was like anger that I could not stop. I remember thinking like it actually feels good in a way to be like yelling because it was just anger that I couldn't stop and totally out of control. Like feeling I cannot stop yelling right now. This feels totally out of control. Yeah.
What did your kids do at that moment? What were they looking
like? So my little one, like I said, my 4-year-old was crying, which just made me heartsick and my older one who I was screaming at did stop laughing, but she didn't cry, which is very typical of her. She's very strong. I'm not going to cry. And I think she was just silent, staring at me. And what really stopped it was their dad, my husband, took both of them and just took them both by the hands and pulled them away from the situation and said, okay, mom needs a minute. Mom needs a minute. We're going to just walk. We're just going to go take a walk. While she takes a minute and takes a breath or something like that. And that was really, it was an intervention. When I think about it, that was thankfully, very much thankfully he did that. And it stopped me. And he walked them out of the room. And then I remember just sitting on the bed crying. It was terrible.
It does sound like it was just such a,
it was
not only
a
tender,
moment.
But scary moment and something that isn't in line with how you wanted to show up.
Yeah, totally. 100%.
What do you attribute that episode to? How do you think you got to that point?
I was in a global role at the time, and which I loved, by the way. I loved it. It was great experience. It was great work. It was hard, but it was good. But I was doing a ton of traveling, and like the fundamental things that I should have been getting, I wasn't, like normal sleep, enough exercise, good nutrition. We all know the fundamental things that we should be doing, which I usually have always had a good routine around those things. So I think those were thrown off, which definitely was not helping at all. And I think even more importantly was I just built up more and more for myself. I think this idea that I had to carry everything. I was the primary breadwinner at home at the time. And I felt this really deep responsibility for carrying it all. That's all I could describe was like how I used to always, and by the way, if I ever felt anything like sore in my body, it was always my shoulders. So I know that I literally felt like I was carrying a weight on my shoulders. That is how it felt. And nobody was telling me to do that. No one was demanding that I do it, right? I 100% put it on myself and felt like I have to do this. I'm carrying it. It's my role to take care of the family. I have to make sure I'm successful in this and effective because this is my role. And I think I just put so much responsibility on myself about that. I was holding my own standard and just felt like I was never living up to my own standard. And I think I was exhausted. And when I said before about kind of rage, like realizing, oh my God, this is just like anger coming up. I'm sure it was resentment. Again, in this ironic, weird way, because nobody was demanding that I do it, right? But I completely put this on myself. And then I was resentful about the fact that I was carrying it all. So it was, like a self-made problem.
Are you enjoying the conversation? There are more game-changing insights still ahead. If you're passionate about driving transformation and want to stay ahead of the curve, join our Accelerated Transformation community. Send us a quick message on LinkedIn or by email and we'll send you an invite. Now, let's get back to the show.
I think that a lot of our problems can be self-made. And then as we go, we train others to begin to expect that's normal for us. One thing that really stood out to me when you were talking about being in that moment is it felt good to be screaming and get this out. And I think that sounded a little bit to me like, there, something had to come out. Yes. It was going to come out somehow.
Yeah.
Whether it was on vacation, it could have come out in another way. And I'm wondering, you talked about you felt pain in your body at your shoulders because you were feeling this carrying of the weight. This wasn't anyone's request of you, but still doing so much and not feeling like you'd do it all led to some resentment. So did this lead you to any aha moments along the way? What did you learn from that?
Yeah, I mean, for sure. Obviously, that vacation was definitely a tipping point for me where I realized, okay, this is not productive. That can never happen again. And okay, if that's the worst thing I do as a mother, all right, okay, that wasn't great, right? But it's okay, that was it. And what do I need to do now to help me not ever have that happen again? And that's when I really started that journey then around both, like I said, the foundational stuff, around both kind of the physical managing my energy type things, right? What do I absolutely have to put as guardrails for myself around how much sleep, how regular exercise, and traveling and nutrition can be really hard. And so I don't think that was at all in any way easy or perfect. But I just got more conscious about it. Like, how do I really try to stay in my routine when I was traveling, which I did get much better about, which was very helpful. And then the emotional, mental piece was much harder around how do I start to try to let go this I have to carry it all feeling. I had to start to ask for more help. Even just asking for what I needed. Like, I realized at home, it wasn't that my husband was like refusing to, I just wasn't asking. I never said, you know what, I really do need you to go handle this bill or pick up the kids next weekend. And like some of it too is permission for myself too. And that I think because I was away a lot at that time too, whenever I was home, it was like, I felt like then I want to be with them, which is very normal, right? But then that was like an additional commit, like every single concert, every single pickup, every single play date, So it was like, then I was never getting any kind of a break, which is, I think, why I was exhausted and resentful, right? Like I was getting nothing for myself.
Tapped out. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I think I did have that realization of, okay, and if you try to keep doing both these things, how's that working for you, Kim? Like now the thing that you were so worried about, like having time with your kids, is that how you want to have time with your kids, screaming at them? No. So I started to be a lot more conscious about not feeling guilty about saying, like, on the weekend when I did get home, I need to sleep in on Saturday morning. I need to have an extra hour of sleep, or I do need you to go drop them off at that play date Saturday. He didn't care. He was like, sure. I just not asked.
I'm wondering, like, when it comes to not asking and also, you know, the self-imposed high standard, where do you think that, where did that come from?
I think that it's, I was raised with a dad who was a Marine early in his life and just had that mentality of pull up your bootstraps and figure it out and deal with it. Lots and lots of strengths from my father that I feel like very grateful that I got from him, and a very high level of expectation for himself. And again, as an adult now looking back, knowing that he never would have wanted to put that on. I think he struggled with that his whole life, and I'm certain that he would not have wanted to put that on me, but that's what happens, right? I think I got that. I think I always felt that. And so I think I just...
It was your normal, maybe.
It was
my
normal.
My dad doesn't ask for help. I don't need to ask for help.
Exactly.
We all just do
it
ourselves.
It out. Yep. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly.
A certain degree of that is healthy, right? What I mean,
100% of strengths, like I say, the strengths from that are I did take that global role, right? Like a lot of people would be like, I'm not doing that. That's a lot, or right? Like I was like, I can do it. I can figure it out. I can. So there's lots of things in my life that I've jumped into that maybe others wouldn't have. And I'm very grateful for doing it. And it was a great experience. And I'm glad I did it. And the learning is, could be more aware before I make decisions about things like that. Like, what are the implications of this, right? What are the risks? What are the implications? Do I really want to, what is the whole picture of this before I say yes to something? And if the answer is yes, then what system around me do I need to support this decision, right? So that I can still be healthy and happy. I just don't need to do it all. That's the biggest learning for me is I don't have to do it all. It is okay to ask for help. It is okay to let some stuff go. It is okay to be like, okay, yeah, that presentation wasn't perfect. Okay, yep, no, it wasn't. All right, move on. It's Saturday. Yeah. Like, instead of having ruminate or...
Can I ask you something about a word you just used?
Please.
Or a phrase. It was, what I love, I think it's, there's a lot of lessons in this, but it was, what, when I make this decision, what support do I need around me so to support that decision? And I'm curious why you didn't say to support me.
It's a great question because that is a difference. It is around supporting me. You're right. It's again, it's a kind of this, is it okay that I'm the one that is now impacting others through my decision? That's how I think I always look a lens through, right? Is like, how is this impacting other people versus is this good for me?
I might be something there, it might not. And I think what I always admired about watching you in action was that it seemed like you were making very clear requests and being very clear about what was important to you. Mm. Tell me about how I came to know that Kim Gaso from this episode.
And that's, it's so interesting, Alexa, that was your perception, which is amazing. And it's like really... It's great for me to hear that because I do feel like I got very clear on my family priorities after that incident. I do feel like I got very clear with myself. And what was so interesting was when I was very clear and aligned to it, it did feel easier. And it did feel so easy to be clear. So it wasn't, I wasn't like, oh, worried about how do I say this? What do I say? I just said to myself, like, that's never going to happen again. What do I need to start doing to make sure that doesn't happen? And there are going to be things that I make decisions about that are going to make other people not happy and make other people say, but this is more important. And my answer is going to be, no, my family is more important. And that's why I'm making this decision. I had a good example of that in that same role. It was probably a couple months later, whatever, the following year. But I had a meeting that I had been invited to in Germany. And it was a meeting that went through a Friday, and I had a guitar recital that I was going to attend the next day with my little one, the 4-year-old. And she had worked really hard to be ready for this guitar recital, and I was going to be there, like, period. It wasn't a question. And when I got invited to this meeting that I needed to be at, which was fine, but the meeting was in Germany till 5 o'clock Friday. And when I looked at the flights, I realized I couldn't stay till 5 o'clock Friday because I wouldn't have made it home for the meeting on Saturday because we were off far away. It wasn't like a direct flight, I think. And it was a meeting with a board member that was invited. It was a big meeting. And I said to my boss, I can't stay till 5 o'clock on Friday. I need to leave by noon on Friday for me to be able to get out in time. And he was very concerned about that decision. and was very worried that it was going to look really poorly on me. He understood, but he was worried for me that it was going to look poorly on me to this board member that was coming, and you're going to leave early and the board member's there, and et cetera, et cetera. And it was not even a question for me. I was like, yep, that's, I appreciate that your support. I appreciate your support. I appreciate your concern for me. And I'm leaving at noon on Friday. And whatever that means, I'm okay. If that means that board member is going to say, this is such a horrible decision on her part, we don't trust her judgment anymore, and she doesn't have this job anymore, I didn't care. I just said, I'm not doing this. I'm not missing that recital. Like, I committed I was going to be there, and A, I want to be, and B, I said I was going to be there, so I'm going to be there. And I left, and I'm sure that they were a little annoyed, and that was that. Like, I still had my job the next day, and those were the kinds of things that I feel like every time I did that, it made it easier and stronger for me to do, which is probably what you then saw, which is great, because that makes me feel good that I could try to help model that for other people, because nothing bad happened. That was my learning, right? You didn't get fired. No, you're still getting your work done, and you're actually enjoying your time with your kids more, right? You'll never did your scream me in the face thing again.
That's wonderful. I think it sounds like you've learned to where your values were. And then once you were
clear,
able to be clear, you put the things in place to support you and your job your kids in the right amounts. You said something about your tactics when you started taking really good care of your body, mind, your sleep, your physical, your exercise. You also said it was a little harder to deal with the emotional and mental side of that. So can you talk a little bit about how you nurtured yourself in that zone too?
Yeah, it's just that voice, right? That always, like I say, I still struggle with it. I still struggle with, is that good enough? Am I doing enough? What else can I be doing for my family? That kind of thing. But I think the awareness of it is like 90% of solving, right, is just that when you start to hear that voice, it was just for me, like, knowing that it's almost like a circle. Like, the more you practice it and the easier and clearer it becomes, then you realize, oh, no, this does feel good, right? Like, it is okay. And so knowing when you experience it and you're like, it's all going to be okay, nothing's going to fall apart, it's a little bit uncomfortable, maybe, right, the first time you try it, and then it's okay. So reminding myself, I think, of that was a strategy, like being aware of it and then reminding myself to say, okay, you did this last time and it all worked out okay. You've done this before. You can do it again. I think that's how I try to manage that, like quelling that voice. Yeah. And I have to say, experience, I just think it's hard. You can't just add 5 years of experience overnight. But like, when you look back on it, you realize, like, what was I afraid? Like, nothing, the world was not going to fall apart. So I do think experience it's wisdom. That's what happens, right? It's like going through it and then being able to look back and say, everything was okay.
I love that you have that viewpoint in hindsight. I'm curious, as you learned these things and were able to get that flywheel of positive reinforcement that, oh, nothing broke, nothing fell down, I'm still good, me and my kids are having fun together, I'm still excelling in my career, I'm getting new opportunities, and I'm rocking it. How did this kind of behavior catalyze the next steps in your career? What did it do for you?
I think it definitely gave me confidence to take risks, to take more risk, to be, again, clearer about my priorities and how I wanted to live my life. And I have done, after that role, I did move into doing my own consulting work, starting my own consulting business. I am back working for a company now, which is also super fun. So it's been back and forth. But I think taking that jump, taking the risk of doing my own consulting thing was alignment to my values around, this is the balance I want in my life. And again, during the time I did it, it was like the right timing. That was the timing for me that I knew would work and give me the balance I wanted. So I just think it was confidence in like future decisions about what I wanted to do in my career.
One of the things I'm hearing from you is you gained confidence in your ability to make choices about what was right for you in the moment.
Yes.
Before, you were at the whim of this like oppressive voice that said, you got to do it all.
Yes. Yes. 100%. Something I thought was like telling me what I could and couldn't do. Yes.
I love it. And now you can engage with that voice and see it, but then you don't have to necessarily do that
listen
automatically. You make choices.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So you did say that with time comes wisdom. What advice would you give to somebody that was maybe 15 years earlier in their career?
Yeah.
Do you have any kind of words of wisdom to share?
I guess it's what I've been saying, which is try to trust your gut, right? Trust the inner wisdom that you have. You have the answer. You just need to listen to it. And when you trust enough, when it's really scary and you're like, should I really be listening to this? If you just try it and see what doesn't break, because I don't think it will break, right? But okay, try it. See if something breaks. If it does, okay, you learn that. But I know how hard it is, like in the moment to say, everything's going to be fine. It's not going to break. Don't worry about it. But yeah, if I could have looked back, oh my gosh, and think about the things that I was so worried, exactly like the things that I thought were going to fall or break, fall off my shoulders, right? Like they just didn't. And if you think about fast forwarding to what you want your life to have looked like, right? What your priorities, you wanted those priorities to be. I think you want to get really clear on that and then just test it, try it. And when you try it, it will not be as hard as you think. That would be I know it's hard to do it. It's like jumping without the net, but that is definitely the wisdom I learned. And if I could just give that to somebody and say, I promise you it's going to be okay, that's what I would give.
I love it. And that thing about getting clear on what you want your life to look like and then trying something to reinforce that, check and adjust. When you think about what you want your life to look like, what is the thing to get most clear on?
I think it's both. If what you're doing, like I said, I loved my work, right? It wasn't like, oh, I hate this work. I hate my boss. It wasn't that at all. I really enjoyed my work. It was challenging, but I enjoyed it. It was exciting. I grew a ton from it. It was a good stretch for me in all those ways, in learning about culture, in learning about working with different people. All of that was great. So that to me is the what, is like the work was what I wanted to be doing. So I didn't want to compromise that. That's another piece, right? Like it wasn't to me. I was like, but then why is that? Like, why should I have to give that up? I didn't have to give it up. I could do both. I could. And so that's to me the how. Is how you manage. This is what you really love doing. I do totally believe in that. Like, I think if you don't love what you're doing, go find something else, 100%. Or find a different culture that maps to you better. And be clear, to your point, on how you want your week to look like, right? What is the percentage of the day doing what? How you want it to look like? And then map it to that.
That is amazing advice. And I think that some of the things that you learn to do along the way allow you to live the life you want that's by design instead of by default.
Oh, I love how you sum things up.
Thank you. But I think it's, you said it all. I just put it, those words. But I think it's something to really take a look at any stage of your life. Are you living the life of your design, or are you living by default? And when you live by design, incredible things are possible. They shine from the inside out.
100%.
Kim, thank you so much for spending some time with us and sharing your wisdom and I feel like you should put your whole heart out here for us. And I think that's so generous. And I appreciate you for being brave.
Thank you.
Where can people talk to you if they want to learn more about you and what you bring to the table and your journey?
I would love that. I guess just through LinkedIn. I'm on LinkedIn, so feel free. And I would love to connect with whoever. Yeah, it'd be great.
In the show notes, we'll put your LinkedIn profile, Kim Gaso, and people will be reaching out. And I'm excited for them to get to know you as I have over this last conversation. But I got the benefit of knowing you a little bit before as one of my biggest mentors. So in takeaway, what I'm learning is that before you know it, you could be living a life in default. A life in default means you're not doing the things that are aligned to who you are. And suddenly you'll find yourself not even recognizing yourself in a certain moment, because eventually it's going to fall off, even no matter how good you are. So what Kim has taught us today is really lean in to living the life of your design and ask for it, because you deserve it. The people around you do, and the people you serve do. If you liked what you heard today, please don't hesitate to reach out to us, listen to us on Transformation Unfiltered on any of your favorite podcast platforms. where you'll get to hear the wisdom of Kim Gaso and other leaders who have learned some messy lessons along the way and turned out even better than they would have before. Thanks, Kim.
Thank you for hanging out with us and listening to Transformation Unfiltered. If you've found today's conversation valuable, leave us a 5-star review on your favorite podcast player. It helps us reach more changemakers just like you. Do you know someone who would be great as a guest on our show? Send us a message on LinkedIn or drop us an email. We'd love to hear your recommendation and appreciate the connection. See you next week for another episode featuring an HR leader just like you who's hitting fast forward on change, impact, and transformation.